Hey, hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me. Holy cow, I'm giddy with excitement today because I have an extraordinary show in store for you. We have an audience with the Queen. Ah, not that one, you silly geese. I'm talking about my colleague, Carol Queen, the sexologist, writer, speaker, educator, activist, and I'm going to add to that list, national treasure. But wait, that's not all. This show is a twofer, don't you know? My guest, our conversation, and the themes discussed in this podcast easily fall into both the Sex Wisdom series and the Play With It series. Carol is, of course, among the movers and shakers in the field of human sexuality who are making news and helping us take a fresh look at our sexual selves. She's also a prominent figure in the adult products marketplace, helping to reshape that industry as well. Carol invites you to visit her on her site, carolqueen.com. She has a monthly column in the Good Vibrations magazine that you can find by visiting goodvibes.com. She's on Facebook, of course, and she's a tweeting kind of gal, too, so be sure to follow her. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. The How-To Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh so informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Welcome, Carol, and thank you for schlepping on over to DrDickSexAdvice.com. It's an honor to have you, a fellow sexologist, join me for this Sex Wisdom podcast. I know that our time together is long overdue, but at least we're making it happen now, huh?
That's right, and I'm really happy. It's felt like foreplay getting ready to do this with you.
So now that you're finally here, would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Greetings, lovely people. I'm really honored to be speaking where you can hear me on the podcast, and I hope you enjoy.
Good, good, good. And you probably won't be overly surprised to discover, but there's likely to be a whole bunch of big fat perverts out in our audience too. Perhaps you'd like to say hello to them as well.
Fat perverts, skinny perverts, perverts of every configuration, hail and greetings to you.
Good, because I happily put myself in that latter category. I mean, I'm a nice person and all, but big fat pervert for sure.
Well, I believe that I have been perhaps called that or called myself that from time to
possibly
time,
possibly even worse, don't you know?
Huh. First, yeah.
So before we begin to chat in earnest, I have something really important to tell you. You know, I ask just about everyone I interview several of the same questions, and one of my favorite questions to ask is, who are your sexual heroes? Not everyone has an answer to that question, but for the folks who do have sexual heroes, your name, along with Annie Sprinkle, Susie Bright, and Alana Gabosh, are the most frequently mentioned. So how does it feel to be an icon for so many?
Well, that is an honor. Thank you for telling me that. It's moving, and I am, I'm making that little motion with my toe in the sand where I'm going, oh, shucks. I do identify as a sexological overachiever, I think perhaps that's what it takes, or at least part of what it takes.
Yeah, and of course you are one of my big sexual heroes, don't you know? So
Thank
that's
you.
One of the reasons why I've been so eager to have you on my show. So let's start by getting to know you a little bit better. I love reading what people say about themselves on their sites. And on your site, carolqueen.com, you have a page titled Meet Carol Queen, where you write, I'm a writer, a speaker, educator, an activist with a doctorate in sexology. First as an organizer in the lesbian gay community, where I helped found one of the first gay youth groups in the United States, and later in the emerging international bisexual community as a sex worker and as a practitioner of alternative sexualities. I typically teach and write from my own experience and that of my communities, even as I reference academic thought on these subjects. So let's pull this apart a bit. Helped found one of the first gay youth groups in the United States. Tell us about that.
Well, this was long ago and far away now. I was 17 when I started this gay youth group, and when I had just gotten to college, because I got out of high school at 16 and turned 17 over the summer. And at the end of the very first Gay Pride Week that I participated in at my new college, U of O, I met a couple of other underage young gay men who told me that they had a hard time touching base with people who both respected their age, weren't necessarily just out looking for chicken, but also who would give them support. And of course, there were the guys who were out looking for chicken, and then there were the guys who were scared that they would be seen with them because they were chicken. And you know, I think this is still gay and sexually variant youth's issue today.
I think so too.
Extraordinarily challenging for people to find adults who are supportive and who also respect their boundaries and the space that they're in. And in those days, certainly that was the case. And these two guys and I, Chris and Kirk, were their names, started a gay youth group. We called ourselves Growing Alternative Youth, which spells gay youth, if you look at the things. And to my knowledge, now I don't know if I have dug deeply enough in the archives to know this for sure, but to my knowledge, we were about the fourth such group to be founded in the United States. There was one in Los Angeles associated with Metropolitan Community Church, which we were to begin with, in Eugene, because MCC was nice enough to say, sure, you can get under our wing. We weren't a religious group in any way, but they were kind to us. And there was one in San Francisco that I just uncovered doing some research the other day, and I hear there was one in New York already, but I don't think there were too many more. Right. And this was in, I think, 1975, 4 or 5. And what was interesting about us is that, one, we were a co-gendered organization to begin with, and actually we were really an LGBT organization, more so than the adult one was. We were pretty diverse. As you know, from young people coming into their sexuality, there's a certain amount of questioning and fluidity among some young queer people, and so we saw that there. And the other thing that we saw, I personally was sliding in between bisexual and lesbian on a semi-weekly basis, I think, in terms of my identity. Of course, you couldn't get a girlfriend if you were bisexual in those days.
So there you go.
I wound up staying with a lesbian appellation for a while so I could get myself a girlfriend. Uh-huh. And then slid up and down the pole again a little bit. Oh, that's what a Freud slip out. Listen to me. Listen to me. The final thing that's interesting about gay youth that I should tell you is that we actually sued the school district for the right to advertise in campus high school publications. And we would have gotten somewhere too, except the ACLU of Oregon took us on as their case. But the school district insisted, as part of the discovery process, of having the names, addresses, and ages of everyone who had ever been at a gay youth meeting. And of course, most of the kids were in the closet. A lot of them were not out to their parents yet, and we could not disclose that information, and we had to drop the suit.
So that was 1975. Interestingly enough, about that same time, like 1974 to be precise, I was working on forming a gay student group at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley.
Yes, indeed. Which is now probably the most gay positive and inclusive religious entity, a religious school, certainly. In
but it was frightful for all of us students at the time because, you know, we were all affiliated with, you know, seminaries, and that was completely verboten for the vast majority, if not all of them.
Yeah, you know what it's like to work with people who really want to have space and want to have space for their identity and information and support and everything, but also who may not want to come out at every turn. It's a very interesting challenge, and certainly was back then when there were, if anything, even more issues around coming out than there are now. Not that there are few today.
Yeah, that's so true. In fact, it's the 30th anniversary of the publication of my dissertation about gay Catholic priests in the active ministry, and I'm actually going to be reissuing it because it has been out of circulation for like 25 years. So that's
fabulous.
Isn't that a great thing? Yeah. Holy cow. Us survivors. Us old folk. I love it. Us elders.
That's right.
So how is sexual orientation or the affectional choices that we make in our life tied up with gender? Or is there really a connection?
Well, I think there's a connection for those people for whom there's a connection, certainly. I mean, the thing that really strikes me about this question is that sexual orientation, generally, we need to identify as gendered in order to identify our sexual orientation to begin with. We're attracted to the other gender. We say there's only two, although of course that's a really old-fashioned notion as far as I'm concerned. I know way more than two genders just in my workplace here at Good Vibrations. So much less in San Francisco, everywhere.
Right.
And we're supposed to identify according to the gender of the person that we're attracted to, per gender or more than one gender or such. And at the same time, strangely enough, there isn't a good, clear orientation that we all acknowledge and have names for that we understand for people who would prefer trans partners. You know, there are some not always very respectful monikers. It's as though that isn't taken seriously as a preference often. And I just think that that it's fascinating how our culture has needed this notion of gender and binary genders in order to give us space to identify around these issues at all. And of course, people are often very driven to identify. There's lots of good reasons to do it, although many people also would prefer not to have to, partly because the words don't exist necessarily, the definitions of identity don't exist that they truly relate to. And I especially think this is true for people who themselves feel gender fluid in some way or not necessarily married to the gender that that the outside world thinks they are.
Right. And interestingly enough, stuff changes with time. And, you know, as we age and as circumstance, you know, impact upon us, our affectional choices, our sexual orientation, whatever that might be, you know, can and does change. I mean, I hear from, you know, lots of people right here on Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, who write in and say, you know, I've been an inveterate, you know, heterosexual all of my life, and then all of a sudden this unique experience happens, and now I'm completely confused. And does that make me gay? Well, you know, gee, I don't think so.
Not necessarily, not unless you engaged in a flip-flop, the likes of which sometimes people do. But, you know, I mean, I think there's... It's very much worth saying that in the straight majority world and in the lesbian and gay community as well, there is not as much space made for bisexuals or for people in between the binary definitions. You know, you can say the same for trans people, although that community is very obviously organizing to good effect. I mean, there's lots more there for our trans friends than there was even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, I would say. But for bisexuals, there's this still a little challenging, and we have to remind people over and over again, you know, that there is this space between the binaries that has existed for many of us our entire lives, and for some, it's something that we discover later in life. And for some, yes, it's definitely true that they don't look back at their old orientation or the way they lived their life. They never look back. They would never go and have the same sort of relationship again that they did when they were heterosexual or homosexual. But for other people, they actually enter into a more fluid space. And maybe it's natural that the fluid space doesn't easily get defined by one word. Yeah, but it would be nice if a few more people remembered bisexuality a little more often. Plenty of us are hanging around going, me over here, my hand's raised, look.
I've heard you
ask
say
who I like, everybody.
I've heard you say that gender makes a better sex toy than a way of life. I love that. And speaking of which, you're quite the strap-on kind of chick, huh? Would you say that a strap-on altered your sexuality, both in terms of your behavior as well as your appreciation for the dynamic of penetrative sex?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
I've heard other women say the same thing.
Yeah, my first experience with a strap-on was with a woman. My second experience with a strap-on was with a man, referencing that bisexuality business that I mentioned a second ago.
That pesky bisexuality stuff.
And I have to say that that there was more depth to the experience. It made me wonder more about what it was like to live in a male body than I had probably ever actually wondered before. I know a strap-on and a penis are not the same thing. One you can easily fit in a bureau drawer, generally the other has a man attached. And the thing that most identifies me with strap-on play, I think, is, of course, the video Bend Over Boyfriend that Robert and I made in association with Sir Productions and Fatal Video, Char and Jackie, who were the impresarios of Sir Productions, worked with me at Good Vibrations back in the day, and so many male-female couples came in looking for strap-ons, and there was such a lot of hesitance, the guys all wondering if they were gay, even though, again, their female partner was going to be the one penetrating them. That doesn't make you gay, nor does, of course, anal sex make you gay. So Bend Over Boyfriend really allowed me to sort of not only explore the fun that I had with strap-ons, but also share some of that with the world. And my partner, Robert, can't be anally penetrated anymore because he had some health issues and surgery and this and that made it problematic for him. So at least we have, you know, like we have the old pictures to look back at back when we were sitting in our rocking chairs. And
excellent.
Reminiscing. There that movie will be. We can have a flashback.
So the final paragraph of your bio reads, "My focus, whether writing, speaking, consulting, or providing erotic entertainment, is to empower and inspire others to discover their own unique sexual profile. We have to remove the stigma from sex before we can make it fabulous." I love that. I've had to struggle to find the place and permission to express my own sexuality, and I am committed to facilitating others as they do the same. Until we honor the full spectrum of consensual erotic desire, none of us will be truly free to pursue our own. Truer words have never been spoken. Sexual well-being is indeed more than simply being able to perform. It's taking responsibility for our eroticism as an integral part of our personality and involvement with others. Wouldn't you say?
I would absolutely say that. And I would add that many people still are not getting the memo that they're allowed to and can take that responsibility, that there are reasons that are not only associated with, you know, us all being able to declare who we are freely and understanding the diversity among us. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I would say responsible, right, to do that. It's self-care, but it's also care of our partners and the community within which we live and look for partners to be able to know ourselves well enough to say, well, here's what I'm interested in. I mean, I know you and your work as a sexologist, and I, in my varying contexts, have I'm sure both heard many people say, well, I didn't know he was a cross-dresser when I married him. I didn't know that she wasn't into monogamy when I got with her. When we can't tell our partners or our potential partners what's up with us, who we are, we don't in fact know whether we're compatible with one another or are actually giving our potential partner, much as we might love him and much as we might be hot for them, the kind of challenge to undergo in their life that they would not really consent to if they knew what was coming. Right. But you can't be honest with a partner, but until you can be honest with yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I saw recently the trailer for the new movie Orgasm Incorporated.
Yes.
And lo and behold, there was everyone's favorite sexologist, Carol Queen, talking about the specious industry that has grown up around female sexual arousal dysfunction. I guess someone had asked you if some drug might be helpful in resolving this dysfunction, and I use that in quotes, and you said something like, yes, if it has a map to the clitoris on the box.
See, this is why doing interviews is a great thing. Sometimes you just come out with something that you never, you're not codified yet. This is a perfect example of that.
Oh, it was just so brilliant. You just completely knocked me out. So,
well, that's so surprising you. And I just want to tell people that are listening that this is, that they're re-releasing this documentary and it's going to be around in theaters coming up this spring. And it is very worthwhile, even for people who are not interested, they think themselves, in female sexual dysfunction. I mean, I want gay men to see it. I want everybody to see it because it really helps unpack what this culture brings to the table as far as its ridiculous ideas about sexuality. It's really worth seeing.
Yes.
And it's funny.
Yes.
It's moving, but also funny.
It's so true. So now I want to talk about your association with the venerable Good Vibrations Sex Toy Shop. You are the staff sexologist, right? Can you tell us what being staff sexologist entails?
I would be happy to. Yes, I started at Good Vibrations in 1990 before I had gotten my sexology degree, and I worked behind the counter like everybody else. And as I went through the process of my PhD program, I got more and more education-related responsibilities. I was the director of the education department. I helped found, actually, the education department. And then finally got my PhD and my title switched to staff sexologist. And really what my responsibilities are fundamentally are to serve as an educational resource for the staff and everyone here at Good Vibes, and also to serve as an educational resource on Good Vibes' behalf for the community. So, for example, my talking to you now falls under that aegis, as well as you know, letting people know that I'm a sexologist and writer outside my hours here. And it also is to represent Good Vibrations to the public and the press. Right. And when I'm doing it to the public, it has to do with sometimes special events like our terrific independent erotic film festival.
Yes.
Which is such a fun gig. I get to take the stage at the Castro Theater with the, you know, the mighty Wurlitzer that sinks down into the stage.
Yes.
And they're playing San Francisco. It brings tears to my eyes every time.
Absolutely.
And I take the stage at the Castro with four drag queens,
of course,
and we chat about the short movies that have been entered into the film festival, and we dish them. My job is to say sexologically significant things, while their job is to be big drag queens. So I think you can imagine what kind of patter goes back and forth between all of us if they say anything too bitchy. I'm there to make sure that the audience knows that we very much respect whatever it was that led the filmmaker to make that particular film.
So do you train the staff at Good Vibrations?
I do some staff training. Charlie Glickman, my colleague and other sexologist, PhD sexologist in the building, is the person who has the most hands-on oversight of that program right now. So they get more FaceTime with Charlie than they do with me. But I am always there for the staff, and I also trot out and do free lectures in the stores from time to time. I'm usually there a couple of times a month, and take tours around the stores, college classes around the Bay Area sometimes want to come in, and then I get to bring my sociology degree out as well as my sexology degree, because that was my earlier degree before I realized as a sex-interested person in the 80s when I got a soc degree that mainly my job possibilities were going to be a soc professor, which at that point I didn't think I wanted to do, although today I think, oh, that could have been fun, but also to work the U.S. Census, and I knew I didn't want to do that. So sexology called me, and I went to grad school. But, of course, when I do the tour, I get to start at the very beginning and explain how the store opened. Joni Blank, sex educator and master's in public health, was doing work with pre-orgasmic women at groups at University of California, San Francisco. And Joni was helping with these groups, and vibrators were recommended over and over again. Women would say, oh, I could never go into one of those places. And finally, Joni said, oh, I think I know what I need to do with my life. I think I need to make a different kind of place.
And it's been an institution ever since. I mean,
it really has.
It's a landmark, both in terms of San Francisco, I remember when the store opened, and it's a landmark in terms of the adult product industry too. I suspect you agree.
Well, it is. It was the second women-owned adult store in the country. The first one was Eve's Garden in New York City, which was not an sort of an open storefront the way Good Vibrations started out. Good Vibes always had its windows covered so that shy people could go inside and not be stared at from the street,
right,
which was the reason that we did it. But Eve's Garden, you had to go up to several floors in a Midtown Manhattan office building and find the right suite number in order to shop for your dildos in there.
Right.
And we really became, particularly after mail order started in the 80s and more people around the country could find out about us, we really became, I think, the template for many of the next couple of generations of women-run and women-friendly stores. Babeland's founding owners interned with us. The woman who started the first store in Boston did as well. Others have been in touch with us or Joni, the founder, who stopped working with us in the mid-90s but still consults. And so there have been lots of stores in lots of parts of the U.S. That have been at the very least inspired by the vision of the kind of store that Good Vibes is. So I'm very proud to be part, not just of this business, but really of a movement, I think. There's an academic sociologist in Las Vegas, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, named Lynn Camella, who is writing a book about this kind of store. And I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to find out what all she uncovers in all of her research. I think it's going to be really, really interesting.
Absolutely. So then let's talk about sex toys. As we used to call them in the old days, marital aids. Do you remember that?
I do, although you don't have to be married, nor do you need any help. need to have help.
So but that was somehow to give them legitimacy, because you couldn't really say sex toys, because sex wasn't good, and you shouldn't be playing with sex, of all things.
Sure.
But, you know, you could have an aid to making your marriage work. So, I mean, how we twisted ourselves into pretzels, but we did it, and, you know, that's how we got going in the whole industry. So I'm doing this whole podcast series called Play With It. So I'm eager to have you weigh in on some of the issues that I address in that series, as well as this Sex Wisdom podcast. So health concerns. Since sex toys are not regulated, and there are no one looking out for the consumer in terms of safety and whatnot, what are some of the more important things we consumers should know about buying and or using sex toys?
Well, I think the two or three most important points as far as safety issues are concerned include, what was the thing made of to begin with? Can you even find out? There has been, and in many cases you can't really, especially if you get a toy from one of the old school stores, they might not even have the information.
Right.
You know, they're set up to purvey this material, but there aren't sexologists on staff.
Right.
And And there's only beginning to be, in fact, I would say over the last decade or so, any level of significant sexological involvement in the adult industry. You know, there have been a few sexologists all along, and you probably remember at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality that Ted would haul some Doc Johnson toys out and talk about them or something like that. And I mean, it's not just though those two entities had no communication whatsoever, but it's only now that businesses are beginning to hire people with this level of expertise, finding out that there might be a good reason to have better trained staff and somebody with that level of knowledge to talk to customers and answer their questions. In the old days, this was not part of it.
That's true. And funny, because I remember, you know, when Ted would do that, and there was a number, you know, of students, my classmates, who would kind of turn up their nose and say, you know, I would never get involved, you know, with the marketplace of sexology marketplace. Oh my goodness, that was all wrong. You know, I'm going to be a clinician, I'm going to be a therapist, I'm going to do this kind of stuff, I'm going to be able to hold my head up high, and I'm not going to sully my name or my reputation with adult products. But that's all changed too, happily.
Well, a fair amount of it has changed, that's for sure. And I think one of the reasons is that clinicians, whether they would get involved with the adult industry really at all, has figured out, because their clients or patients have talked to them about their needs for information, and the fact that if somebody is going to help someone else have a better sex life, and particularly if you're going to help women learn to have orgasms, you want to know a little something about sex toys. You want to have that be one of the tools of the trade. I mean, we don't call them sex tools, but they can be. I mean, that's closer to the notion of merit wage, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So true.
So that's one thing, and the other thing about I want to not fail to say about the materials part of the health question that you asked me is, one material in particular has gotten a very bad rap over the last few years. Good Vibes actually was one of the first entities that helped it get a bad rap. That's a plastic softener that's part of many of the materials toys have been made of up till now, called phthalates. And phthalates may have pretty toxic effects on the human body. There's not a great deal of great research, but there certainly are some arrows pointing in Danger Will Robinson directions with phthalates, including the fact that the European Union has gotten really really up in arms about them. Some of the better research has come out of Europe, not anywhere in the U.S. And in the U.S., they're starting to go after phthalates as a material in baby toys and pacifiers.
Exactly.
So if you don't want your little child to goom on this material, the question then should be asked, do you also perhaps not want to consider putting it into mucosa? All you have to do is take a big whiff of those toys and get that new car smell, that shower curtain smell, that's a chemical smell, isn't it? You will be able to tell for sure. And the other thing, you just mentioned silicone, and of course that is a material that, another thing to look at is how porous is the material that your toy is made out of. That is another question. Porosity, is it something that has pores, even holes in it, which many of these phthalate-containing materials always did have, especially initially when they began to make toys out of this stuff, whereas silicone is very, very non-porous, tiny pores, hard to get anything to soak into it, easy to clean, and much more non-toxic in that way.
But you know what, something that I've been noticing as I get closer and more involved in, you know, this end of the adult business, is that, you know, people say this is a silicon toy. Well, it doesn't really tell you what kind of silicon, how much silicon is in it, you know, what grade is it, and a lot of stuff is being passed off as silicon because they now know that the consumer is alert to the fact that silicone is a really good thing. But I mean, if you're going to have a toy that is, you know, fabulously inexpensive, and it says that it's 100% medical grade silicone, you know something's wrong.
It's probably not going to be fabulously inexpensive if it's medical grade still code. You're absolutely
right. But
if it is
that expensive and they're saying that, probably the packaging is a little bit dubious.
And as you said in beginning this train of conversation, there isn't any official oversight body for sex toys. There really isn't. There's probably some arguments to be made that there shouldn't be from sort of a libertarian perspective.
Wouldn't it be grand if the industry would be able to police itself? I don't see that on the horizon, but would it be?
Well, not on the near horizon. I actually think I might see that on the slightly farther horizon. It's certainly something that I talk about whenever I have the opportunity within the industry and say that, you know, what the industry has figured out and this business of can you trust what it says on the package is actually, I'm going to spin it in an interesting direction and say it's a little bit of a good sign. It means the industry knows now that the consumer is watching and cares.
Yes.
And if that's true enough, and if certain elements in the industry can convince the consumer that they're trustworthy, and of course some of us really care very much about that, Good Vibes for one, and some of the newer toy companies care about this very much as well. They want to make a bright shining line between the old school, more cheaper, more mass produced sex toys and the sort of the new boutique or designer toys, partly because they want to be thought of as a higher quality product. And if an educated consumer base can determine who to trust in this way, it will probably bring more of everybody in the industry in that direction, just because they'll understand that that's what the consumers are going to be willing to pay for. And there's only so much that you can write on your packaging without consumers saying, golly, I wonder if that's really true. Let me do a little more research. And of course, plenty of people aren't doing this research yet. Plenty of people don't know that there's a health issue even to be thought of. Plenty of people don't care. They're not buying organic food either, and they are microwaving in plastic, and they're, you know, doing everything that the green folks are suggesting that they continue or that they consider not doing. But a lot more people every month tune into this set of issues, and they wonder whether or not what they're using for pleasure is really helpful for them. And I want to say the final of the three things I was going to mention is, how do you clean this thing that you got? Is it easily cleanable? What are you cleaning it with? Is what you're cleaning it with toxic? Or is what you're cleaning it with good for you? Can you rinse it off all the way? That set of issues, even if you have something that you can use, a relatively serious anti-bac soap on, is the material going to allow you to rinse it off so much that you're not going to get any anti-bac into the parts of your body where you do have bacteria that are good for you there? Thank you very much. So that's another piece that people ideally are going to want to consider, or that sex toy companies will take into account when they're choosing what to make their products of.
Well, I'm just looking at my clock and I see that we are way over time, and I'm just getting started with you. I would love for you to come back next week. Could you possibly?
I would be honored.
Oh.
I would love to come back next week. And now that I know how to work this gizmo that I've set up with, I think I can actually say that I can do that.
Yay! Well, totally. So, again, until next week, then, we will be visiting you at carolqueen.com and goodvibrations.com. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Fantastic. Okay, bye-bye.
What a terrific show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my conversation with Carol Queen and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video Library. There's no membership fee, This is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. So remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty goddarn sweet, huh? Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.